WDEL On Demand, brought to you by Stanley Steamer.
Air duct cleaning.
Delaware's clean air experts. Call 1-800-STEAMER.
There's a lot happening and a lot not happening. With your government, Legislative Hall in Dover, bills that have got stuck in committee, bills that are moving forward, and it may upset you, it may not upset you. We do have State Rep Mike Ramone on, a man who's well-respected on both sides of the aisle. And Mike, glad to have you on, sir. How are you?
Thank you. It's good to, you're back from your little voyage there. It seems like it was pretty fun in with the cows, huh?
I'm not going to go too far about, you know, how much... I like the fair. I like the fair. I like the pygmy goats, like the cows, like the sheep, things like that. It's fun, though. I mean, I don't know. I had a great time meeting a lot of local people, having a nice time. It was one of those crazy bus tours, though, like for 10 days, you're going like two or three different cities or towns every day, and you got 45 minutes here, go. You got an hour and a half here, go. So that was crazy. Then we had some freestyle days afterwards, but it gives you a nice overview of where you'd like to go and meeting people. And oh my gosh, like I said, the small town pub really is the hub of action. But anyway,
it sounds like it was one of those vacations that you need a vacation after you're done.
Pretty much 2 days of laundry, yeah. And yes, afterwards. So let's talk about what's going on in Delaware. What we can expect? The gun bills, first of all, very, very contentious. And I had Brian Townsend in here. He's a prime sponsor of all these anti-gun bills. Now, we're told that because you have a lot of union people here in Delaware who, by the way, own guns and like to hunt and shoot and things like that, and they're Democrats, and they're saying, you know, they'll vote for a Republican and get rid of Brian Townsend and others if they continue to try to take away their gun rights. Well, that's been stalled in committee, and I'm wondering, how possible or likely is it for a Democrat to bring that out at midnight, not unlike they did with the minimum wage bill, for which you negotiated a compromise last year?
Yeah, you know, politics is politics, and until we're able to govern, people who are more centrist-oriented, who try to do whatever's right for Delaware, sometimes are going to be painted from a far right or a far left direction into something that we're not. The reality is, look, over the last 3 years, we passed some very responsible, very healthy gun legislation that ended up making Delaware much more conscientious and aware of the need to have responsible gun ownership. Everything's an equal, you know, equalizes itself. I think we've gone to a point where some of these gun bills have extremely tilted the balance in a way that I just don't think they're going to come out, and I do think if they do come out in the last minute, I think they'll be counterproductive to maybe a one political side's priorities. You know, what you got right now with the Democrats, they're in super majorities in the House and in the Senate and a majority in the House and, of course, the governorship, and what's happening is, you know, they have gotten so many people that they have issues within their own party where there's, you know, how far is left, is it right, you know, and you get to the point where you got a progressive saying one thing and a centrist saying another thing, and there's as much angst just in that one party as there normally is in the entire House. So I think what you're going to end up with is, I think we're going to end up with a quieter year ending. We've done a wonderful job of passing the budget. We have the bond bill is just being finalized today and tomorrow night. I think we're going to get that done to get it printed up to be voted on the floor. And grant and aid, I think, will be done by Wednesday. If that's all done before Thursday, I don't think you're going to have this contentiousness on the last day. But again, there's 41 House reps and there's 21 senators. Anyone can start to, you know, stir the soup and see what happens. And we'll see where it takes us. I'm hopeful that we stay reasonable and we remember that we're there to govern and we're not there. The elections were over in November, but we'll see.
So let's talk about the budget bill, since you used those words in our conversation. $151 million increase. Is that about right?
That's about right. Yes, we're trying to keep it. We were trying to keep it in the 3 percentile somewhere. Last year, I guess it was 3.8 when I was on JFC. This year, we're up in the 4.2, 4.3. I can't remember the exact number, but it was up over 4%. You know, there's what they call door openers that give you an automatic need to increase at some level. You know, some would say 4 is about the highest that we should go. Some would say it should be more around 3, but, you know, we're within the range. I just am very pleased that we were able to continue to keep the commitment to the budget smoothing executive order that the governor placed, because I believe, you know, that's important. And quite frankly, since we couldn't get it passed last year because it didn't get on the floor to get voted on, much to the governor's credit, he went forward and made an executive order. The bad news is the executive order is vulnerable. You know, it's like any executive order. I don't like executive orders from governors or presidents because they only stand while that person's in power. The next governor could come in and you know, decide we're going to spend all that $100+ million that we've managed to save, and quite frankly, God only knows what they could spend it on. So I think it's very important that this become a bill, which is why we resubmitted the bill with a couple gentle tweaks in it to make it more tolerable. I just wish it would have had the, I wish they would have brought it up to bring it to a committee meeting and let it have a vote, but they chose not to do that.
So we'll get to that after the break, a little bit more detail. Budget smoothing, what is it and why? It has, actually does have a bipartisan, I don't know, a heritage to it. It was.
Yes.
And but let's get to what are some of the, like, for example, we look at education, and many of us would love to see a really, I know it would be expensive, but some very in-depth audits of school systems, putting all the object codes in every school to define the same sort of thing. For example, an object code would be a spending item, whether it's a salary, right, or a phone card or a cell phone or whatever. And yet that keeps going up and up and up and up. Is there anything in the budget that you would have liked to have seen either cut or held back?
Well, I mean, clearly I just feel the way we fund education is broken, and we need to reconfigure that whole dynamics of how to do it, how to do a reassessment of properties in a way that's fair and equitable and people can afford and doesn't cut their legs out from under them. But we fund education in Delaware in a very healthy manner compared to most of the rest of the country. We're in the top 10%. I think we're around 6%. So what I do believe is important, as you stated, in my businesses, you know, having a few different fitness centers, if I have the person at the one center classifying expenses in different categories than the person at the other two or, you know, each of the other centers, how am I going to be able to dictate which center is doing what and who should be more rewarded and who should be maybe scrutinized a little more? That's our schools. We got 19 districts, which, of course, you know, I think is extremely ridiculous,
yeah,
but we do, and they have 19 different ways of documenting some of their items, and I don't believe any one of them are at fault, but I do believe there should be one organized aspect of how you attribute. If someone's using a copier, it goes in this expense line. If somebody's using buying something else, it goes in that expense line. Everything is documented in a way that you can compare across the state to be able to fiscally manage the ability to run our schools and our buildings and even our administrative costs, so that we can get more money into those classrooms for those teachers and for the children who we're supposed to be trying to educate. And we say we fund it well, but we don't have the same percentage of money getting down to those classrooms as most of the other states in the country, and that's an issue.
Well, as I understand, funding education is about, what, 66% of our budget?
I think it's a little less than that, but you between educational funding, I think it's about
higher ed as well as public ed. You know, you have all.
Okay, if you add in higher ed, yes, you are absolutely correct. Then I was talking about just public.
No, but I think of higher ed as well. Does and I'm going to, I guess this is, I'm going to sandbag you here. I normally don't do that.
Okay.
But one of the big complaints amongst listeners and myself, University of Delaware, do they really need $100 million a year or more from our taxes?
Yeah, well, and so the question is, and I'll try to be fair and reasonable as opposed to reactive. I believe the economic impact that the University of Delaware brings and the student magnetism of what it brings to the state of Delaware is extremely valuable. I also believe the state of Delaware doesn't capitalize it on it well enough, and we maybe need to do a better job of that because we're educating some very brilliant young people in a very good college or university that aren't staying in our state. they're getting educated and they're bringing that value somewhere else. So I think if we're going to try to capture one of the best colleges in the nation, which I think University of Delaware can be and is in certain lines of their education, we need to do the same, have the same efforts in then trying to create environments to keep those students in Delaware, which is why we passed the Angel Investor Tax Credit Bill last year, to get people to invest in our own people and keep them in Delaware, which is why we passed other initiatives this year to help the incubators and the other businesses that are capturing small business growth. One little business like MBNA, starting with a very small number of people and blowing up into what MBNA ended, is an extreme economic impact to a little state like Delaware. So yeah, maybe we get something that can refill that Seaford plant, the DuPont plant downstate, and maybe we get something that can get the experimental station back to what it was when DuPont was kicking. But we have to keep the people that were investing in education in Delaware in Delaware. So I hear your point. Do we really need to give them that much? But I'm a business guy. I want to see if I get a return on my investment and it's really helping Delaware grow internally and expand our tax base, I'm not as worried about that. If I can't get that, well, then maybe I need to lean on the environment a little better to help enhance that.
What do you say to a homer like myself that says, you know what, University of Delaware should be for Delaware kids, not for the out-of-staters so much?
Well, and what I would say about that is, having a family that all our children chose to go out of state and, of course, really tap the bank account and how expensive it was, the University of Delaware, the value of that education at the University of Delaware for the children who go there and get educated in viable lines of education that are needed by society are extremely well positioned to be very successful. So I would say, you know, I don't mind people coming in from out of state paying a much higher percentage of the tuition, because we're getting their extra money, which helps us educate our own population at a lower rate. You know, the University of Delaware students, the Delaware students get quite a discount, and I think that's valuable.
We are heading in the last few days of this first half of the legislative session and the season, so that's why we have State Rep Mike Ramone on the phone. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on budget smoothing. Why is it important? What does it mean to you? Also, what about the death penalty bill? Where's that? And senior tax credits. Remember, that was taken away from seniors. And there are folks like Mike trying to bring back that tax credit for you. So, where does that stand?
More with Rick Jensen coming up from the Bolden Brothers Heating and Cooling Studios on 101.7 FM, 1150 AM, WDEO. The Rick Jensen Show on 101.7 FM and 1150 AM, WDEO.
On the phone, State Rep Mike Ramone, and we got about a minute before news. Mike, so budget smoothing. What would you like to say about this before we get to news and then cover it in more depth after the news?
Most important topic is, when times were tough, we had to cut taxes, or we had to raise taxes, and we had to cut spending. The environment has changed last year. We ended up reinstating a lot of those cuts that we made, but we did nothing about the tax increases. My hopes is that we would sunset some of those tax increases this year because we had more money come in. We've chosen not to do that. The concern is, if we can't take politics out of the decision-making in Dover, we're never going to be able to govern. And the budget smoothing bill was a bipartisan effort set up by the governor to digest that exact type of thinking, and I thought we did an excellent job getting something that was substantial and digestible, but the governor, we didn't have the opportunity to vote on it, so the governor went and made an executive order, which I'm concerned
could
be eliminated someday.
When we come back, more details on that and what it means to you.
The Rick Jensen Show on 101.7 FM and 1150 AM WDEL.
On the phone, State Representative Mike Ramone. We're talking about the wrap of the legislative session. This is part one of the two-year session, really, isn't it, Mike?
That is true. This is the 150th, so we go this year. So the bills that aren't finalized in June still trickle into January of next year when we go back in session.
Yeah, it's rather uncomfortable trickling.
Yes, sometimes.
The bills.
Yes.
Yeah. So what we've gone over so far, the gun bills likely will not come back. Thank goodness. And let's see. Looks like the budget is passed, and not a whole lot of yelling and screaming about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Before we get to the budget smoothing, because there's a lot of detail that I want people to know about. Oh, yeah, the death penalty bill. And it was rather specific when it comes to law enforcement and very specific when it comes to premeditated murder and would have to be proven. What's the status on that?
Well, as you know, the courts kind of weighed in on that, but there is an effort to make an adjustment to bring some aspects of the death penalty bill back to Delaware. I think you know this, Rick, at least the listeners do. I'm a Catholic boy that's pro-life across the line. I don't believe in the death penalty. I don't believe in, what do they call it, death with dignity, and I don't necessarily believe in abortion. So I guess all three ways, I just think somebody else is supposed to make those decisions, not us. So I do understand if my father was a policeman and God forbid, you know, somebody shot him, I'd probably want to go take him out myself, but hopefully I'd have the strength to do the right thing and let the system handle it and do what they may. And not only that, some people would say in some situations I have spoken with someone in particular in this environment, and they said they feel more comfortable with the person, his exact words, rotting in jail than letting get off as easy with a death penalty. So there's a lot of ways to look about at it, but I don't think that particular bill has the legs to get passed, but I do think it will come up in conversation.
Do you think it's going to go to the floor for a vote, final vote?
No. No, I think it's going to be the committee discussion, and I think it's already being discussed in the House on it. It may come to the floor for discussion and a vote, but I don't think it's going to get through and to get a governor's signature. I don't believe that. I think it's just an awareness bill that we're trying to keep the discussion going. And as I said, these bills all still continue into next year. So whatever legs or momentum it gets this year, it's just a way of carrying it through. You might see more of that discussion next year.
Anecdotally, do you feel like you're in a minority, being a right-to-life purist, anti-abortion, anti-death penalty, and against physician-assisted suicide?
Yeah, and pro-marriage equality, and I got a whole list of things. I am about as much of a tweener as you can get. And Delaware used to be a state of tweeners. Like, the independent Republicans and the independent Democrats were the majority, and the independents, not necessarily the bipolar section of a far right or a far left contingency of one of the parties. So, we always were that state, and we've had an incredible amount of people moving into our state thanks to some of the adjustments with the federal tax code, that a lot of people from Jersey and New York are coming in droves, and I think that's changing the complexion of the thinking in some areas. But, you know, I go back to what I said before, and that brings me looping right back to the budget smoothing bill.
Yeah, it does.
Our job in Dover is to govern. And what we should be doing when we're governing is creating as many environments as we can that takes the politics out of the decision-making in Dover. And the budget smoothing bill does that very well.
So let's get to that, and allow me, if you will, to give a brief overview of what the heck that is and why it exists, and then we'll talk about what it means to people. So sure. It wasn't too long ago when the Governor Carney was looking at this horrible DFAC report showing that we're actually millions of dollars in the hole. So what were we going to do? Well, he said there are a lot of cuts that had to be made. They were looking at increasing the cost to state employees for the health insurance. And as for the grant in aid, money that goes to nonprofits to do work that many people feel needs to be done, but the government shouldn't be in charge of doing it, was cut to zero. He said, we're going to cut that to zero. No money for charities and nonprofits to do this good work. And then everybody has to make a case for their organization, and we'll see where we go. So the final analysis was, it was a 20% cut and all the money to charities and grant in aid. So with all the cuts and the yelling and the screaming and all, it seemed a lot of people, I know you're one of them, it would make a lot of sense that when we are flush, let's have a fund where we would use that money to make up for those times when we're really in you know, financial turmoil. So there's this bipartisan organization. You're part of this. Ken Simpler, who used to be the state treasurer, also a Republican, was part of this, as well as a lot of Democrats, too. And you came up with this budget smoothing process where it would be a fund where you put excess monies into it in times that are flush so you could use it in times of financial turmoil. Is that a pretty good synopsis?
That is an excellent synopsis, and some would equate it. The four legislators were Anthony Del Collo, Senator Del Collo, Quinn Johnson, Representative Quinn Johnson, and Senator Harris McDowell, and many of us were on either Bond or JFC when this was going on, so we had a pretty good feel of the budget. But the reason, the one little part you missed about Governor Carney walking in with a multi-hundred million dollar deficit was, that was his first year as governor. Now, thank goodness the gentleman had some experience as lieutenant governor, treasurer, and whatnot, because if he didn't and had that, many of the path out of that mess might have been much more painful. But he found a way. We, much to the credit of Melanie George Smith in JFC, we found a way to do a single-line item review of every single item we spent money on. And we took a balanced approach where we cut 50% of the offset by reducing expenses and 50% by raising taxes. Last year, everyone thought we were going to have another terrible year, which is why some people didn't want to digest the budget smoothing bill. And they were like, how are you going to do a budget smoothing bill when you're going to have deficit years, because they thought the recovery had lasted its life and we were going to go backwards. Well, we didn't go backwards. And the governor had the insight and fortitude to do his executive order, and we then took 40-something million dollars and put it into this budget smoothing fund, and we took another 100-and-something million, and we replaced a lot of the spending cuts in education. We replenished the grant and aid. We did everything that we undid everything we had done the previous year in cuts. So this year, when we have another 100-and-something million surplus, my thoughts were, now this is the year that you sunset the tax increases. And that has not come up for discussion. But again, much to the credit of the administration, we did keep the budget smoothing effort going. And his attribution to adding to the budget smoothing fund gets us up over $100 million. Now, remember, the year that we had the $400 million deficit, we, you know, $100 million wouldn't have fixed it. So I believe during our meetings, what we had in the original thinking was the budget smoothing account would have a 200 or a particular cap, $200 million, $250 million. And when you got to that, you would then start giving money back. But others of us believe, you know, when you have a surplus, Rick, what ends up happening is the money goes to the budget, the budget's increased by 4-point-something percent, and the rest of the money we try to use in one-time spending so it doesn't artificially inflate the budget and then obligate the following year to these spending increases. So if we started saying, well, let's take 50% of those one-time expenses and use that for tax sunsetting or abatements, and the other 50% used for one-time spending, I would have felt, again, that would have been a formula rather than a political decision, and the formula would have kicked in this year. So we would have been able to give the increase that we gave to the one people that could least absorb an increase when we took away the senior tax credit, we could give them back that, which would be about a $5 million hit to the budget. We did last year when we digested, or the year before when we digested the senior tax credit movement and took the money away, we said, well, people shouldn't be able to move in from New Jersey and New York and stay here for a year or two and then be able to get our senior tax credit. So we gave them a 10-year waiting period. Any of the new people coming in, they have to live here 10 years before they even qualify. So we made sure the tax credit was just helping the old-school Delawareans who have been paying taxes their entire lives and will for their entire lives. So I thought that was important to sunset that. There was initiative to do it through Epilogue and, of course, my bill to do it as a bill, but neither of those got digested this year, but again, my bill stays alive for next year, so I'm hopeful. And then the second part of this, we raised transfer tax by 1%, which brought in about another 70-something million of income, maybe 60 or 70. I wanted to sunset that.
Yeah.
It got to committee, and we sunset. We stopped the bill. We tabled the bill in committee because we weren't sure we had enough money to digest the $60 million.
All right. And a disappointment to a lot of people, senior citizens, who are saying, man, I'd like to have that tax credit back.
Well, and guess what else senior citizens are doing?
Huh.
They're selling their homes and downsizing. So we're dinging them twice. With both of the increases, we're hurting those who have the least amount of money. And guess what, Rick? When we give them back money, do you think they put it in their IRA? Do they put it in their 401k? No, they spend it and they buy their grandchild, you know, extra stuff at the boardwalk, or they, you know, maybe they'll buy a little special dinner for the two of them one night out or something silly. But the point is that money digests right back into our economy and then hits a secondary tax base, which brings in more money. So it's just, you know, it behooves me of why we can't get people to think this through. But again, if we digested the budget smoothing bill, all these things would kick in automatically, so the legislators wouldn't be able to talk about it politically. Now, some don't want to lose that spending power. Others of us who don't like spending taxpayer money would probably be much more pleased.
And that brings...
and that's bipartisan, Rick. That's not Democrats.
Oh,
that's
no,
not
I know. Now, you were saying there's a big divide amongst the Democrats, and Democrats control the state between, you know, the liberals and those who are, I guess, more moderate, I suppose, would be the word. You read Blue Delaware online, you read Delaware Liberal, they're really against budget smoothing. They're saying, well, we don't need to be saving money for a rainy day like that because we want to spend it. And when we have programs, we want to spend it on people. And besides, we have a rainy day fund. So they say we don't need that. We should spend the money as their elected officials, lawmakers, see fit because they elected them. And they hope that they'll spend it the way they want them to spend it on whatever. And and we don't need it because we have a rainy day fund. Well, what do you say to that?
Yeah, let me briefly touch on that rainy day fund. We do have a 2% rainy day fund, and 2% of $4 billion is a lot of money, you know, $80 million in a rainy day fund that we don't quite spend ever, and we have it. And the reason why is because once you start using your rainy day fund to balance your budget, it affects your bond rating. And your bond rating affects what you can borrow money for and do all these capital improvements like the roads and the buildings and everything else we're trying to keep running and up to date. With this one-time spending. So where you end up with your rainy day fund is you have a rainy day fund that you can't use when it rains.
Yeah.
And I use the example of the Great Recession, and I'll say, you know, I've had someone come to me, you know, well, why didn't we use that when we had the recession? Why didn't we use it when we were short the $800 million, when Governor Markell had to try to tiptoe through to balance his budget that one year? Why don't we use this? And my point is because those governors were very prudent in being concerned that, what if we end up with another great recession turning into a great depression, which does happen? So the governors were trying to be smart and reserved, so they tried to use other means to balance the budget other than taking the rainy day fund. So my point being, that rainy day fund is such an extreme last-ditch effort to address a catastrophe in the state of Delaware. We don't want to touch it. But a responsible business person or a responsible governorship would place an environment where you have secondary money that you can use in that. And we should be responsible enough as legislators to be able to balance our budget, put a little bit away when we have extra money, possibly have the rule that whenever we have one-time spending, a certain percentage of it goes into that rainy day fund or into that budget smoothing fund until it hits a certain cap. And then we start returning revenues to the people, because, you know, you don't overtax just to have the opportunity to spend at the end of the year. The real good budget people will end up having those numbers come much closer than we're able to do. It's tough to do the estimates on the entire state budget, but you get my point.
It's no, I do. Yeah,
something that we take the politics out of the decision making.
Well, you're not going to, because it's politics that got them into the position, and so they will continue to engage in politics to keep their position. By the way, I was on one of those sites. I don't know if it was Blue Delaware or Delaware Liberal. It might have been Blue Delaware, where somebody had made that point about the bond rating, and the logical argument against that was, "Oh, that's not true."
So, oh, that's true.
I know it is. You're right there. But what are the committees on which you serve?
I am on the bond committee, capital right. improvement, and yeah. then, of course, revenue and finance, banking, insurance, you know, all the other traditional committees that mostly in the business sector. I'm on education and veterans.
But
also,
when it comes to bond and revenue, I mean, you know these things and you know them.
Well, I was on bond for 4 years, yeah. and then last 2 years I was on JFC, which is the you know, if you look at the bond, it's sort of the infrastructure, buildings, road repairs,
yep.
Del Dot. If the JFC is basically like you're balancing your budget to run your home so you can pay your bills. So I was on both JFC for 2 years. This is my fifth year on bond. And quite frankly, that's just not an accurate statement. I do think most of the people in Dover do their best to treat Delaware in a category that is much less partisan than other states, but it has trickled in more this year than I've ever seen it in the past, and it's a little concerning.
No, I understand. You got someone like Carrie Evelyn Harris, who was running against, Carper, I think,
mm-hmm.
And she had people, she's very, very left-wing, people coming down from New York and Boston and Vermont and all these places to campaign for her. I'm thinking, whatever happened to Delaware? Just, you know, campaign
well, I mean,
for Delaware.
And Rick, I mean, let's, you know? let's talk about Joe. Let's talk about our vice president running for president.
Yeah.
I personally, you know, there's a lot of things. I know the Bidens, obviously. You know I did some bills with Beau. You know our, that world.
Yep.
And here's the reality. Joe Biden is a nice man. I may not agree with his politics at all. We can sit here and have a debate for hours, but to say he's a creepy grandpa or whatever, I think that's terrible. That's the stuff that this last election, some of that kind of stuff went through my world. It's just, it hurts families, it hurts people. Let's talk about if he'd be a good president, not if he's smelling someone's perfume.
Well, that's
which
not
is
even
absolutely ridiculous.
And by the way, that's pretty much over and done with. What's happening now is you've got like 22, 23 other candidates who are saying Joe's not qualified because he's willing to work with the other side. And he talked about, you know, fighting for a Civil Rights Act, extending the Civil Rights Act from 5 years to 25 years to 25 years to 98 years. And he did that by working with the segregationists and making the argument and winning that argument. And now the other Democrats are saying, well, he's not qualified to be president because he works with the other side to get things done. That's where we are now.
but you know what, Joe, I'm sorry. You know what? That is something that Joe is accountable for and should be discussing. That is a political world. That's not this. I don't want to call it fake news or whatever because I don't want to get into
but
that.
The point is, he worked with others, people he disagrees with, and he got what he wanted to get done, which is extending
right.
the Civil Rights Act
right.
and such. And
absolutely.
They're taking him apart, saying, "Oh well, how dare you talk to the other side
right.
and do something?"
And remember, it's Democrats doing Democrats. I often say for a lot of the Democrats who don't like Joe or Donald Trump as their president, they should just go back to look on the reruns of all the debates and listen to how the media treated Trump so well at the beginning when there was a million because they figured there's no way Trump would beat any Democrat. So
right.
they kind of made him look good. And then when it was opportunistic, they then wanted to make him look bad. So the media has turned into a world of political
assassination.
Yeah, you know, whatever happened to
whatever gets him clickbait and stuff like that. Yeah.
Or the old-fashioned guys that just
yeah.
reported the news.
Well, don't, they thought, I think a lot of the people in the national political media thought that Hillary would beat Trump, so they wanted Trump. With that in mind, though, I got to get going. We got to take a break, get to news. Mike Ramone, state rep, thanks so much for your time. And
thanks.
I certainly hope that people have a pretty good handle on what's going on in Dover. Thanks to you.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
More Rick Jensen next on 101.7 FM and 1150 AM WDEL.